The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio for a... all sorts of good information today. Bill's not on there. Bill's in the cone of silence.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, no, you're not in the cone of silence anymore. Oh,
I guess just my headset's in the cone of silence.
You can't miss some good smart, huh?
You have no headphones?
Here you go, Bill. How about that?
Oh, can you hear us? That's much better.
Oh, little technical difficulties. We could do those before the show started.
When the other
hosts
play with the controls, I'm not...
We could get this squared away before we start, but there's never time for that.
Control.
So, anyway.
Oh, that takes all the fun out of it.
All right, so I'm Aaron Ryan.
Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin, who's been rendered silent over there now. You with us, Bob?
I'm doing great. How about you? How about y'all?
Okay. Well, we were going to go to church this morning at 9:30, except for it started at 8:30. That's what we get for going to a different one. Didn't do our recon properly. So, go to 11 o'clock. So we've been racing around town rewriting our check for church, for different churches. Kind of nutty. We have the first hour we're going to be talking about Indian tribes, dams, and national security. It kind of all goes together there. Normally people who don't live in rural...
What'd you say? Damn Indian security?
Yeah, damn Indian national security.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't pay attention.
I know. When I was typing it up, it was very tempting to have a little fun with words there. But I know that we have our folks in Philadelphia who listen to us on WNJC on Mondays from 1 to 3. And so they might not deal with stuff like this. So we want to make sure that they're in the know. This story takes place in Montana. We are in California. We are live Sundays from noon to 2 here on KCNR. So hope you join us on Sundays. We've got a chat room open. Mondays, I guess you're kind of on your own. You're listening to the archive. But we're happy to have you join us anytime. And by this afternoon, I will have the commercial-free archive up if you want to send this to a friend. So... WeThePeopleRadio.us is the website, and I don't think I missed anything.
No, just tell a friend.
How'd we do? Housekeeping done? We're moving on.
Yeah, looks good.
So we have Lawrence Kogan with us this afternoon. He is the managing principal of the Kogan Law Group and president and CEO for the Institute for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. And that's where we first met him, was talking about that. But that's a whole different topic. We're moving on. Now the Kogan Law Group is representing, I'll just let him tell you, because I've got a lot of information on the website. So I hope you will go on there and do a little free reading. But Lawrence does all sorts of neat stuff, a lot of international business. And I was going to read this bio, but it goes on and on. Lawrence, you're a busy guy.
Well, you know, you got to burn the midnight oil, as they say.
It looks like you're burning that, and maybe some of our midnight oil too.
Burning next week's midnight oil.
All right. So, where would you like to start on this little adventure?
I was called in from friends in Montana back in February, and they wanted me to get involved in a very controversial debate over a water compact that was being negotiated, or that had actually been signed already by the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes of the Flathead Indian Reservation in northwest Montana, the state of Montana, and the federal government, which would basically fix water rights in that state pretty much in significant favor to the tribes. And the irrigating community in northwestern Montana that has family and ranches and farms on the Indian reservation and above the Indian reservation, as well as businesses, were very upset that they would lose state-held water rights to the tribal government. And they had, they had the bill that the Montana legislature was looking to enact to effectively ratify that agreement between the three governments. And they were having a hearing in the Judiciary Committee in April, and they wanted me to come in, and I didn't want anything to do with it originally, but I started hearing about all the horror stories and how the hardships were being faced and by these people, and I, you know, my heart went out to them, and I thought perhaps maybe there's something I can do here for them.
So, okay, so for the people who don't have any clue what goes on with water rights and or Indian tribes and water rights and all that, why is this a bad thing?
Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. What it is, though, it is a reflection of federal policy toward federally recognized Indian tribes that basically favors them over everybody else. So every state has, you know, its own laws concerning land and property and water rights. In this particular case, because it was a treaty between the state of Montana, the federal government, and the Indian tribal government, those state rights were basically given away in favor of the tribal government, and the federal government was just happy as a lark that that was being done, and we think perhaps the state was getting paid off in order to do that through federal funds.
Oh.
But no one asked anybody that lived on the reservation that had family farms or family ranches. Nobody asked the people who had businesses on Flathead Lake, which is the largest natural water lake west of the Mississippi. Nobody asked anybody any questions. It was just a done deal. It was political.
And water rights are property rights. I mean, your property's not worth much, and your farm and your ranch isn't worth much without water. And so this literally steals private property from people.
In the West, water rights are very, very important. You can't irrigate your land without water. And water rights, based on appropriation doctrine especially, which is, you know, the first that gets to use the water and diverts it from natural course and continues to divert, basically has the water right, and then you have to put it through a water court, as the law in Montana now provides since the 70s. People get very emotional about this.
Well, California is deep in the throes of water issues right now. I mean, aside from the drought, just the fact that they've taken a lot of the water away from the Central Valley farms and basically turned them into a wasteland. So we're aware of...
Well, you hear all the time in California, anyway, that 80% of the water goes to agriculture.
Right.
But actually, that's a sleight of hand with numbers, because 50% of the water goes for what they call environmental purposes, a.k.a. the fish.
The salmon.
So 50% of our water in California, with what little we have, gets carved out and winds up going, just running down the river. 40% goes to agriculture. Well, if you get rid of the first 50, that 40 becomes 80 of what's remaining. So
right. So they're basically favoring the fish over the people.
Exactly.
Which is what environmental extremist groups are famous for.
Sure. And so now if tribes get to supersede water rights, you can't get there.
Well, the tribal government has an interest consistent with the environmental movement. They want a pristine environment. They want pristine wildlife. They want pristine fish. They don't want hatcheries. They want natural flowing fish.
It's kind of funny, though. So, here they gillnet the heck out of them, and they don't really care which ones they are, but it's quite a bit of selling of those fish, and since they self-regulate, it's really no big deal, I guess.
Well, but plus there's water here, though. Montana is like the jewel of the Nile of water. It's got many, many rivers. And water, as you know, in California, has become a commodity. It's quite valuable.
Exactly. Well, how likely is it, these guys, how likely is it ideas like this will bleed over into other states if this goes through?
Well, this is a special water compact. It's actually the first water compact that Congress is reviewing that, you know, for ratification that would involve off-Indian reservation water rights. Because in the Pacific Northwest, there are a special group of treaties called, quote-unquote, Stevens Treaties, where there was the Secretary of Interior Stevens in the late 19th century that went around negotiating with tribal governments to, you know, make reservations from large portions of the country that were aboriginal lands before the, you know, the battles between the U.S. government and the tribal government and the tribes. And these treaties allow, in this particular treaty, the CSKT Water Compact allows the CSKT tribal government to basically regulate off-reservation use of land and water in their favor.
Oh.
And they have fishing rights and they have hunting rights. They can walk into your backyard north of the reservation and, you know, in pursuit of an animal or in pursuit of fishing. And they don't need to ask your permission or obtain an easement.
Wow, that's a neat trick.
That's crazy. I thought we were over the top, but that sounds really over the top.
Right, and because they shared legal jurisdiction with federal agencies to regulate the environment, such as the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. And the, you know, the EPA, for instance, is their partner in crime here. They delegate jurisdictional authority to the tribal government. They can regulate a zone of almost 50 to 100 miles outside the reservation so that nothing pollutes the lake upstream from the reservation. No air, ambient air, could pollute the lake as it falls to the water level. And you have to treat the whole habitat for these threatened or endangered species as pristine. So your economic activities are severely curtailed.
Yeah. No touching. No using.
No, right.
Well, I think that's more California.
And you can't look at it because you can't get there.
Well, you may cause them distress, and that's no good.
Oh, my God. Well, okay, so these dams are big up there. This involves... Where do the dams... I guess I should ask you, where do the dams come in all of this?
Well, this particular lawsuit, I mean, first of all, that this part of Montana, the dams like the Hungry Horse Dam, which is a very, very large dam managed by the Department of Interior Bureau of Reclamation, right by Glacier National Park, is the dam that, you know, provides a lot of the water that goes downstream through the Flathead River to the next biggest dam, which is the Kerr Dam. And both of these dams are part of the Columbia River system that flows out of the Columbia and into the Pacific.
Now, is that water stored primarily for agriculture, or is it flood control, or what was the main reason for the dams?
When these dams were built, the primary reason was, they wanted navigability for interstate and foreign commerce. They wanted it for agriculture, and they wanted it for other, public interest purposes. Nowhere did they mention fish, wildlife, or environment. Over the ensuing years, from the early 20th century toward the end of the 20th century, especially during the Clinton administration, they changed the purpose of the reservations from, mostly agrarian purposes into fish, wildlife, and environmental protection. So, and this is consistent with the tribe's cultural, spiritual, and religious values.
It just sounds so much like what we're dealing with in California. They've done the same thing with our dams that were built primarily for agricultural use and flood control, and now they're trying to make their primary use fish and environmental.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to just take them out, actually. Big thing here is taking them out.
Well, and along the Klamath, they're taking out four dams. I mean, I'm going to be visiting people out
in our neck of the woods?
Region, in the upper Klamath, as well as in the lower Klamath, down in Siskiyou County, Northern California. So they're all up in arms because they can't irrigate anymore because the water is going to be flowing through rather than diverted.
Exactly. Well, and in the case of that river system, we've done lots of shows on that. And in the Klamath system, if they take those dams out, the Klamath River won't be a river year-round because historically it went dry in the summer. So,
right.
And it wasn't because of drought. It just was because that's the way the river worked. So having that series of dams actually maintained the water all year. So how that's benefiting fish habitat is a giant mystery with... No answer in truth, actually. You've got to lie if you're going to get the answer they want.
Right. And so, really, my involvement thus far with the community in northwestern Montana has begun in a legal sense regarding the transfer of this large Kerr Dam, which is a black start dam, that is a hydroelectric powered dam that is independent of the electrical grid. It could start up on its own, but it's also a Category 3 high hazard dam, which means if it were to fail, you'd have lots of death in the valley below it.
Oh, I wondered what that meant.
And the thing here is this is the first time in U.S. history that a dam of that stature will be handed over, and it's already been handed over as of last Saturday, the 5th of September, to a tribal government that has very little accountability, transparency, or responsibility to the public interest.
And I'm just going to take a guess here, but little or no expertise in actually running a dam, large or small?
Well, this tribal government has been a co-licensee since 1985 of this dam because it sued the federal government to make sure that it had a piece of the dam because it sits partially on the Indian reservation. And they sued them in 1985, and the Reagan administration came up with a settlement between the parties. And essentially, according to what the government story is, they basically gifted the dam to the tribal government 30 years in the future.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting twist.
No review. There was no public review, no public hearings. They said that they are, but there's no records to back that up.
Now, you say this is a large dam. How large is it?
It's rather large. If you were to look up Kerr Dam on the Google, I mean, this thing stands, I think, 300 feet high from the ground.
Oh, yikes. So it's
and
like Shasta Dam.
It's a large dam. It's the second largest dam on the Flathead River. The first one is the Hungry Horse Dam, which is almost twice as large, and this one is twice as large as any of the other 11 dams and reservoirs that the tribal government also owns. So if you're a farmer or a rancher on this Indian reservation, the water that flows in from the mountain gets stored in a reservoir. The tribal government decides when it comes out of the reservoir. If it comes in from the lake, Flathead Lake, Kerr Dam is the dam that holds it in place and distributes the water, lets it go, and the tribal government decides when it wants to let it go. Yeah. And then there's an irrigation system, which was built with U.S. taxpayer monies that these people paid for and were entitled to have the restored to them, and for which they would pay maintenance, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs took it back from them, saying, you know, you don't really own it, we do.
Oh my gosh. All right, we need to take a really quick break. We're going to wind up with all of them at the same time. So people have 2 minutes to look up the Kerr Dam, and I would think when you look at those pictures, you'll realize this is a...
If you Google Kerr Dam, K-E-R-R Dam, it's got some great pictures of it.
Yeah, this isn't some little deal here. We will be right back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, for all the information on today's show and lots of others for the last 5 years. Be right back. So now we're going to take back our dams that we didn't build.
Away our native tongue.
Oh, Bob, make it stop. I can't take it.
On top there
is Lawrence, we're just doing
no,
that.
No,
to...
no, listen, no dam puns, guys. No dam puns.
Well, we were reading here in the Wikipedia under Kerr Dam, and they've already updated their Wikipedia.
Yes, I know. Did you see, by the way, our Breitbart the Breitbart article that was written about our lawsuit?
I did read it. Did I post it?
I posted it.
It
went overboard a bit.
Yeah, just slightly.
Slightly, yeah. I think they're into hyperbole over there.
they went completely hysterical. Well, this interesting. The one part that was I found irritating was now it's going to be the name of the company. Now is going to be Energy Keepers Incorporated. Oh, that's terrific.
Well, yeah, that was an interesting company. It was set up by the federal government for the tribal government, and it was set up in 2012, but it had the expertise in order to take the license. So it co-licensed with the tribal government for the dam. The federal government backed it up with, oh, yes, they hired employees from Northwestern Energy that was the former licensee.
Oh.
That gives them the ability to manage and operate the dam.
Now, Lawrence,
if they were serving as interns. Okay.
Oh, okay.
If the tribe gets control of this dam,
would that give them future
ability if they wanted to remove it? Would that be something they would have the power to do, or is it still?
Absolutely, they would have the power to do it, just like they did in Klamath. They could take the dam down, which is not something that you should dismiss because they're already talking about taking down Libby Dam in Northwest Montana.
That's the big push. It's a giant,
and that's part of the Columbia River Basin as well.
So people who depend on that water, Southern California,
they're out of luck.
Yeah, good luck to you.
They're going to be high and dry.
Literally.
Yeah.
So what do you think can be done at this point, since this is kind of the culmination of a long range plan, I guess?
We're on, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, sorry, we're talking to the public now.
Yes, okay, well, that's good, because the public should know. Now, the fact that this Kerr Dam is pretty much the final piece of the puzzle, this tribal government now owns all of the dams on or pertinent to the reservation, so they can now, with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which manages and operates the Flathead Irrigation Project, which is the intricate complex of canals, irrigation and lateral canals that feed the irrigation. They can turn the water off and on when they want to suit the fish and their other environmental and wildlife fish, interests.
Well, and to crush agriculture.
And to use a pun, you know, the irrigators be damned.
Yeah.
And this is actually happening now because they have a drought management plan in place that the Department of Interior had several years ago developed without public input, that was hidden behind the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission management of the dam, which is really the crux of our lawsuit, is that since 1985, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the Department of Interior have collectively together both deceived the Montana public about who has control over the licensing and management of the dam and the license itself, the implementation of that license. In 1985, that license had about 53 different articles. During the Clinton administration, in the years of 1997, 1998, and 2000, the Department of Interior, secretly behind the curtain like the Wizard of Oz, created 27 new articles for this license agreement, all focused on wildlife, fish, and environment. And the Montana people had nothing to say about it. And FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, just rubber stamped it all into the license. And presto chango, you have a new license.
Wow. But if a company like Pacific Corp up there in the Klamath dams, if they want to relicense the dams, you can't get there from here with FERC.
Right. You know, now the FERC regulations, the statute, the Administrative Procedure Act, the Constitution all provide for public hearing. Okay? And when we were in the hearing in Federal District Court in the District of Columbia last week, the Department of Justice actually made the bold assertion that the public doesn't have a right to public hearings. It's up to the discretion of the agencies. Even if it's written into law, it's up to their discretion.
Wow, not Obama's Department of Justice. How could they ever think that?
Non-elected officials get to make the rules for everybody to live by.
Well, they tell you what you can't do and they tell you what you can do. It's like the European Union.
Yeah, so, you know, that old expression with the inmates running the asylum, the inmates are the bureaucrats.
This is the same EPA that just poisoned the river with mining waste.
Yeah.
It's just a little mistake. There's no biggie.
Right. Now, again, this is the process-based arguments that we've made in the lawsuit. No public hearing has ever been given since 1985 to ensure that the Montana public, that the conveyance of the dam to the tribal government and the transfer of the license to the tribal government and its subsidiary, Energy Keepers, Inc., was in the public interest. They never did that. They never had to account for that. And they don't believe they have to, because it was a political deal done back in 85, which effectively was a gift of a future interest 30 years into the future to this tribal government. Now, did they ever think that we'd be in a post-9/11 world? Could you have conceived of that in 1985?
Yeah, no, nobody thought about that kind of thing. And so with the sovereignty clause that the tribes have over this, I know there was some discussion about the Turkish government
being involved. Well, we have to back up
involved?
A little bit here, though. Okay. We have to back up. And what we need to focus our audience on is the fact that tribal governments, if they're federally recognized tribal entities under federal law, are entitled to a host of waivers from normal regulatory requirements imposed on private industry or private actors. They don't have to meet the same requirements as you or I would have to meet, and they get exemptions. And this occurred over the course of 30 years. And when the time for the conveyance, for notifying the government of the conveyance and the transfer of the license, the tribes were again given an exemption not to have to meet the normal acquisition rules, which required public hearing, due diligence, review. The government had to explain that this was in the public interest and show why.
Yeah, how do they get that? I mean, why don't they have to comply to the same rules?
Because a federally recognized tribe is a creative fiction that the federal government developed 40 years ago to give preference to tribal governments to right the wrongs of the past.
Oh boy.
So this is kind of like reparations, repentance, and restoration of the tribe's sovereignty and its claims over waters and lands that they once had. And it gives them this almost, it's like a racial discrimination, which the Bureau of Indian Affairs has called benign, that you can't yet attack successfully in court. Because when a law is considered racially discriminatory, there's two different levels of analysis depending upon what type of law it is.
Ew.
If it's a law that favors a federally recognized tribe, then it's considered benign racism. And it goes into a low-level review called rational basis to determine its constitutionality. And all the government has to do is show a logical relationship of the racially discriminatory law to some bona fide federal policy, and they can defend the law against a claim of unconstitutionality. Now, if you are a black-owned entity or a Hispanic-owned entity and you had a law or the government implemented a law in your favor, it would not be subject to that same low-level review. It would be subject to strict scrutiny to determine whether the law or the implementation of the law was constitutional, which requires the court to undertake a balancing test to examine the benefits versus the costs of doing what they're supposed to do. Federally recognized tribal status doesn't go to that balancing test. It's automatically deemed okay.
My gosh. Well, okay, so
that violates the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, both in the 14th Amendment, if a state does it, and in the 5th Amendment, if the federal government does it.
So where does that come in? It just goes out.
So if they have all these environmental, fish and wildlife conditions in the license, and the Endangered Species Act, which it implements, is applied in favor of the tribe's interest in fish, wildlife, and environment, that's a racially discriminatory application of a facially neutral statute. But according to the U.S. government, that's benign racism. It's okay.
That's good racism. Wow. Wow.
This is stuff that sounds like it's out of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so for the rest of us, I guess we have to sit around and wait till we're a minority and then try to get all our stuff back.
Either that or you could become a political organization such as a federally recognized tribe.
And
if you get that political status, then they can make laws in your favor at the expense of everybody else, and they call it okay.
Wow.
But that affects a lot of economic interests, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
It affects your constitutional rights, which you have to check at the door, because remember, federally recognized tribal entity is on a reservation, which is deemed sovereign. Even the feds can't go in there unless there's a federal crime.
So if this kills your water rights and makes your property worthless, too bad.
Well, see, you in Oregon and in Northern California have a lesson learned to teach the public in Montana. Because of the breakdown of the dams and the effect on water rights there, property values plummeted, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they haven't taken the dams out yet. But, I mean, it's like any other, you know, they're talking about raising Shasta Dam. I don't mean R-A-Z, I mean R-A-I-S. So by making it 18 feet higher, that affects all the property in the small town of Lakehead that's near that. It affects all the people who have marinas or a restaurant or whatever you have around the lake, all the recreation. And so those people can't do anything with their businesses because potentially that business is underwater. And that's been going on for 34 years.
Right. So you could understand why people, you know, and have farms, ranches, and businesses around the Flathead Indian Reservation are quite distressed.
Oh, yeah.
And why they didn't want this dam conveyance to go through. So what we did was we tried an emergency filing the day before the dam transfer went through, because we were only hired 2 weeks before that. So we had to put all the information together within a very short period of time, which is, you know, what we do. And we were filing it a day before the conveyance, and they granted us an emergency hearing in Washington. And then all of a sudden, they changed the judge on us. The judge assigned to the case was one person, and then they dropped in another judge who had a totally different perspective.
Who just happened to be not having your perspective.
Well, it happened to be an appointee of President Obama.
Oh,
yeah. So we know his perspective.
Yeah, we all know how that worked out. We need to take another quick break here. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I know this is confusing and it's a ton of information for people who haven't looked at this before, but if you think this isn't coming for you, you're dreaming, because all of this is going to affect your power rates as well. Hydropower is clean, green, cheap power, but not for long. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with Lawrence Kogan.
How are we doing?
Didn't know there was a Give a Damn song, Bob. Who was that?
Spanky and Our Gang.
Oh, why didn't I know that? That's why I don't.
I knew that.
You were in the cone of silence again.
Oh, there you go, see?
Oh, my gosh. Welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're on with Lawrence Kogan this morning, or this afternoon, I should say. And he is the managing principal of the Kogan Law Group. And they do all sorts of stuff. I like this one sentence, Lawrence, from your website, because it sounds like all the stuff we need. Since 2003, you've briefed U.S. industry and various U.S. federal agencies, executive offices, and congressional committees concerning how emerging foreign environmental, health and safety, and intellectual property laws, regulations, and technical product standards are impacting U.S. businesses' profitability, a.k.a. killing it, and impacting technological innovation and international competitiveness. This kind of stuff's breaking us, isn't it?
Well, I'm sorry?
All this nutty regulation is just breaking businesses.
Well, there's a growing trend internationally to curtail capitalism. It's an anti-capitalist movement around the world that's been ongoing for the last 20 years. And so when businesses go overseas and they look for opportunities, they have to answer to governments that are not orientated toward free market and private property, as our government used to be until 2009. Now, our government is just like these foreign governments.
Yeah, they've jumped on the bandwagon because why would we want to take care of the people who live here? What's this going to do for power rates? Do they get to control that, or is that controlled by, like...
Well, this is interesting because the tribal government does own a power company on the reservation, owns a transmission company.
Okay.
But the dam itself generates its own electricity, and the tribe gets to pursue electrical contracts, electrical transmission contracts, for its own favor, and it claims that it's serving the public interest as an ancillary benefit.
So taking that dam out would probably not benefit them at all then.
Well, yeah, which, again, it's a large dam, so maybe they can work with it as long as they can keep the fish happy. So, they can make money and keep the fish happy, then they're all for it. But it's interesting how Northwestern Energy, which is the former licensee operator of the dam, got a sweetheart deal, and they're the exclusive transmitter of the Kerr Dam energy.
Hey.
It so happened that they were sponsoring the tribal government's conveyance and the new subsidiaries. Licensee status because they knew they were going to get a transmission contract out of it.
Well, as long as it worked out for them, I mean.
Well, I think the making money part might just nudge the fish out by a hair. I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could always buy new fish. You know?
That's right.
Exactly. You could just go to Costco and, like, around here, you know, we have these coho salmon that are supposedly endangered, but we can buy them at Costco. So, you know, it's never quite added up correctly.
Right, but, you know, going back to this federally recognized tribal entity status that mm-hmm. the tribe enjoys and has enjoyed since it became a federally recognized tribal entity, they have all these regulatory waivers, so they don't have to meet any requirements. So when Montana public citizens had inquired through this administrative process before the dam was transferred about whether the dam is assured to be safe and secure by the tribal government and the subsidiary and the current licensee, or the previous licensee, Northwestern Energy, they were never given any answers to those questions. They weren't given an answer as to whether they had, you know, flood emergency plans. They weren't given any answer, which is covered usually by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in their regulations. And they weren't given any answer to the question concerning whether the tribal government and the subsidiary corporation and the Northwestern Energy had at all engaged in any exercises for national security purposes with the Department of Homeland Security. They just wouldn't talk about that. You couldn't even go on the FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission website, and find any information since the information was deemed by the Obama administration to be classified.
Oh, nice.
So public gets no accountability from the tribal government or FERC, no transparency. Unlike, you know, a normal private entity would, because private entities would be subject to the regular requirements of FERC law, and it would also be subject to even Securities and Exchange Commission, because usually they're public companies. Now, Northwestern is pretty much owned 80 to 90% by New York Wall Street hedge funds. Mm.
So
they're geared toward making profit.
Well, where does the national security end come in on this?
Well, with all these regulatory waivers and
right.
the fact that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission won't answer people's questions pursuant to an administrative process that is offered to the public to gain information to allay their concerns, you have a situation where people who live near the reservation or on it don't know whether the dam is safe and secure.
Nice.
And back in 2012, there was this law that Congress had enacted it in its infinite wisdom that provides, you know, federally recognized tribes with the ability to lease reservation lands to any third party they want, including foreign parties. They can walk onto the reservation and lease lands for educational, religious, cultural, agricultural, and other purposes, with no government oversight.
So even if they had a FOIA request for maintenance records or anything like that on the dam, you can't get them.
No, they're classified. You won't get them. And this administration is famous for its non-transparency on FOIA. I know because we filed FOIA requests with EPA and NOAA back a year ago, and they wouldn't give up any of the information.
Wow.
So what are the odds that they'll lease any of this to
They won't. They don't believe that people are entitled to a public hearing. Why should they be entitled to information?
Right. No, I mean, what are the odds that they would lease this to a foreign entity? I mean, is there any discussion of that?
That's one of the interesting things that we discovered, because when you go through the CSKT's annual reports, which are online, and you go through their newsletters, they were bragging about the fact that they had been in Istanbul, Turkey, in the Middle East, and how they had developing relationships with the government of Turkey and Turkish American associations of business in Washington, D.C., California. And Turkey, for instance, in November 2010, gave an all-expense-paid trip to 17 Indian Native American tribes from 14 different U.S. states, and they took them to Istanbul for 8 days. So we thought this was kind of interesting, especially since the CSKT companies are specialists in uranium mill tailing cleanup. So if you have uranium spill somewhere, they are experts in cleaning this up, and they've been awarded by the federal government to do it under federal government contracts. We also found that the CSKT subsidiaries manufacture missiles and other warfare devices for the U.S. government, Defense Department, plus also the Saudi Air Force and other countries.
Wow.
And, you know, this is all public information. So then we start to look at, okay, well, if this is what they do, then why is Turkey interested in these 12 to 14 different reservations? And so we started to figure out, okay, where are these physical reservations? Anywhere ranging from Michigan out to South Dakota to Arizona to New Mexico to Washington State to Oregon to Montana to Wyoming. And we found out that of at least 12 of these reservations, maybe 14, I believe, were located within 100 miles of a nuclear power plant, a nuclear fuel facility, and uranium mines and deposits underground. Now, no one could say for sure what the Turks are up to, but, you know, because they're on paper to be NATO allies. But do NATO allies go meet in private with Vladimir Putin? Do NATO allies, you know, refrain from fighting ISIS, but go after the Kurds?
They do now, because we live in a world that's completely upside down.
Right. Do NATO allies trigger all of this refugee flow out of the Middle East, which the president is now taking those people and depositing them all over the United States into sanctuary cities or even Indian reservations? So when you take all that into account, and Turkey is known to be a harborer of militant fundamentalist Islamic groups, declared on lists of terrorist organizations, you start to think about things and you wonder, could that happen here?
Well, I think when you look at this refugee situation we're involved in now, I think it certainly could help happen here. When they're talking about bringing 10,000 in, and other folks are saying that could blossom into 100,000, where are they going to go?
Right, but again, if I go back to the lawsuit, and I only stay within what we filed in the lawsuit. Sure. We did mention the fact that the government of Turkey and trade associations with Turkish roots were out there cultivating relationships with Native American tribes, including the CSKT. We did mention also that these reservations, these 12 to 14 reservations, including the CSKT, went to Istanbul. We also know that in all these reservations, these 12 to 14 reservations, as per the court record, were located approximately within 100 miles of, you know, those types of sensitive energy resources. Hmm. And we also put in the file for the court record Middle Eastern reporting, and even New York Times and Atlantic, the Atlantic Journal, that is the transatlantic medium that is well respected, had reported about terrorist groups being harbored in Turkey. Now, if you go back and look at all these reputable sources, and you start looking at where all the uranium mines are, because the Defense Department puts out reports to Congress, which we have in our filings, Los Alamos Labs in New Mexico had findings in Montana, you start to become a little bit suspicious. And something that the federal government should look to, or look at.
Yeah, it's a nice little puzzle that doesn't take a genius necessarily to put it together, not that you guys aren't smart guys, but we should be paying attention.
Right, And this is publicly available information. This is not, you know, clandestine service. This is public information. And the government just dismisses it and says, the State Department says, Turkey is a dedicated NATO ally.
Yeah, so don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. And Defense Department, if you talk to people there, you'll get a different story.
Yeah, right. Regular people who actually care about the country. We're all going to need little blue helmets, aren't we?
Or helicopter hats. Tinfoil hats, they like to call people like that.
Yeah, although now if you're not wearing a tinfoil hat, you basically can't read. I mean, if you can read, you can figure this out. Need to take one last quick break here. We're speaking with Lawrence Kogan. Hope you'll go online and look at some of this information, especially if you're skeptical. We want you to go there first. It's wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. We like our dance, and we want to keep them. Oh, my gosh. So in our last minute and a half or so, what would you advise people to do, Mr. Kogan?
Well, I would advise people to pay close attention to what happens in Montana, because there's 326 Native American reservations throughout the country. There are 566 federally recognized tribes. This can be easily duplicated in other reservation areas where people innocently believe that the laws of the 19th century and early 20th century continue to govern their property and water right ownership, which they do not. Since the 20th century, since FDR, continuing again into especially the Clinton and now the Obama administrations, we have a moving target. The law keeps on changing, the goalposts get moved, and people's land and water rights are diminished in favor of federally recognized tribes. They do a lot of the environmental regulation for EPA and Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA.
Yeah, they're being manipulated hard.
Well, they're working together. Let's put it this way. They are working together to keep the land pristine and the water pristine, and they're pushing people off the reservations and out of the federal lands.
Well, that's the rumor, but most of us who have been on an Indian reservation haven't found pristine land. No.
Well, I have to tell you, the Flathead Indian Reservation is immensely beautiful.
Oh, well, okay, that's a rare and wonderful treat. We don't see that always.
Well, Lawrence, thanks for coming on. We're out of time. We got to have you back.
Well, thank you. I'd be very happy to come back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
We'll be talking about this some more. Thanks very much.
And by the way, if anybody wants to look at the legal papers, they're available on our website.
Exactly. And you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. The links are all there.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good day now.
All right, you too. Bye. Hit it, Bob.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to We the People Radio. Hour two here. We're going to shift gears. Missed the be Bill banging his head on the microphone there?
That's my job.
Is that all working out for you now?
Yeah, it's okay. I'm all right now.
Be better?
It's okay. Let's see.
Oh, my gosh. So the first half, we were talking about the Kerr Dam up there in Montana and how that has been transferred to an Indian tribe with all the rights, privileges, and secrecy that goes with that. So hope you'll take a look at that on the website. It is wethepeopleradio.us. Tons of information there. And this hour, we're going to make a radical change. And we're going to switch over to Kim Spencer. She is the co-founder and she is also an author. Their website on Facebook is The Thinking Moms Revolution. Easy for me to say. And I tell you what, we've struggled hard for this interview. Have we not, Kim?
You know, we have both bumbled through a few little missteps, but here we are.
Oh, my God.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for finding us and having us.
Yeah, it was fun. I stumbled across you on Facebook, and I thought, hey, these guys are talking about all the vaccines and the all the things with autism and all that. And we did kind of a series about all that about a month ago, but I really thought your information was quite good, and since it's available online, pretty much anybody can get it, because we've got folks who listen in Philadelphia on Mondays, people who are in California listening on Sundays, and, of course, folks in between who listen online. So,
absolutely. We are a very much international group, so anyone can find us anywhere that they can access the Internet.
I think that's awesome. ThinkingMomsRevolution.com.
Exactly.
All righty. So, all right, how'd you get involved in all this stuff?
Well, my personal story, I'll keep it short and sweet, is that my son, who was born almost exactly 15 years ago in the year 2000, was really ill as a baby and a toddler. He was eventually without me having any clue what the word autism meant, except for the movie Rain Man, diagnosed at almost age 3 with exactly that pervasive developmental disorder, which if you look that up is actually autism, straight up autism. And after that, and I hit the world, I hit the books that were available at the time, which were very few, and found that, you know, what had happened here wasn't just a mental disorder or a genetic issue, as much as it was environmental and medical, and found really quick answers for him. Brought him back around with lots of alternative treatments and different ways to boost his immune system, to find out about his food allergies, to detox his body from the toxins that the world had, you know, pretty much gotten into him from, you know, from the get-go. So now we have almost. Is there a typical ninth grader? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no. No, there isn't.
But we're doing well. Yeah, he does his own work. He is included in the same classes as any other kid. He does his own homework. He dresses himself. He goes to the potty. He will learn how to drive. He'll go to college and he'll get married if he wants to. And we've got him back. So that's kind of how it was with me personally. So in my travels through the decade of my fight to find him and get him back and find the people who could help me do that, Facebook was invented. And we just kind of fell into these groups with these other moms that had similar children that were dying for answers that mainstream would not give us. And so we met up about special diets, and we met up about, you know, politics, and we met up about the best books and the best practitioners and how to find grants to help us find all this and pay for it ourselves since insurance wouldn't. So there was just, you know, every time a new book came out about it, there was, you know, a big campaign about that, or, you know, just campaigning our politicians and campaigning everybody to bring attention to the fact that all our kids were really sick and no one was helping us at all.
And so, did these parents all have kids who were on the were all their children on the autism spectrum?
Yeah, pretty much. I would say though that there are plenty of parents out there that also find their, you know, their environmentally ill children maybe not falling on the autism spectrum, but also might have ADHD, a seizure disorder, extreme food allergies, learning problems, focus problems, you know, behavior problems. They've got that new diagnosis, oppositional defiance disorder, you know, just
what?
All these kinds of things that skirt. Yeah.
Okay, we don't know about that one.
Kind of
what is that?
Behaviors and health issues that skirt around all this, you know. So,
how long did it take you when you started this journey with your son? How long did it take to get him back to a so-called normal stage?
It's been an amazing trip for us. I will have to say that we've been very lucky in the fact that somehow, you know, his genetics were not that bad to where we couldn't detox his body or we couldn't get some things turned around. We always had consistent wows with changing the diet, with hyperbaric oxygen, with homeopathy, with everything was a small wow along the way.
So there was no one thing that really...
No, not at all. And I really do feel like, you know, we were lucky that we chose what to do in the right order somehow. You know, like a lot of parents I feel like can try something and they don't see anything from it, but if they might have tried it after another protocol or, you know, in a different order or somewhere down the road, that maybe it would work better for them. This is the problem. And this is why the Thinking Moms came together, because there is no medical protocol. There is no standard of care for our children at all. It's go get some speech therapy, go get some occupational therapy, physical therapy if you need it, some ABA therapy, which is basically just like, you know, here's a Skittle if you do it right. And these are the mainstream things that are offered to our children, and it absolutely is just an unfair paradigm. I mean, our kids are not, should not be in a psychological situation.
And so they're basically going after the symptoms and not a cure.
Absolutely, you know, and prevention, which, you know, is a whole other subject, but, you know, when you realize that this is such a medical issue and the things that are making our kids better, reverse a medical problem. So, you know, if Patrick was toxic and he had food allergies and he had tons of autoimmune issues going on, then if we could get back out of that, we could see that the autistic symptoms disappeared. So it is very much medical. And so that was what happened. We all came together, a bunch of us. I mean, there was probably 50 people in this one group I was in on Facebook. And we all met at an autism conference in Chicago, a great group called Autism One that meets every year. And most of us were able to meet in real life. And one girl who was like a vice president of a bank, go-getter, she said, hey, let's all write down our stories and put them together and put them in a book. Here's the deadline. I'll organize this. So we did that. 24 of us actually made the deadline and made the choice to do it. And that's how we started. So we put all of our stories in a book. It's called The Thinking Moms Revolution. My son's story is the last chapter in the book. My son is about the oldest one of all of our children, of the 24 of us, and his health is better than most of the kids so far, but he's also older and we've had a lot more time to work with him. So anyway, that's how we came together, and we just felt like after the book came out, we couldn't stop. I mean, there are so many people that still have their story to tell, that so much that still needs to change, so much that still hasn't changed. The word needs to get out there that there's hope and healing for our kids, and, you know, an average mom out there who works and might be divorced and has very little support and very little financial help and very little time, will never stumble upon this information, and they need it. We need to get it out there. You know, there's so much hope and there's so much you can do to bring your kids back from this. And, you know, we run off the stat. I love to start with the stat. You know, it's just not about autism. 54% of American children are ill, chronically ill. So, and that stat does include obesity. So when you say, obesity, diabetes, autoimmune disease, autism spectrum, just on autoimmune issues like rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, allergies, asthma, ADHD, ADD. When you add all this up, I mean, you've got half a chance to have a perfectly healthy child in America today. And this isn't fair.
That's not really that good.
It's terrible.
Those are pretty bad odds.
I mean, if I was faced with the fact that I had a 50-50 chance of my kid being healthy when I decided to have a child and 1999 and wanted to, you know, get pregnant and have Patrick, and somebody said, you got a 50-50 chance that he won't have severe health problems.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, who would take those odds?
I mean, when you think of that that way, you think of that that way, and that's what really everybody's facing right now. And, you know, to think that our government is just completely ignoring this, our medical system is completely ignoring this. How many times, my friend's children, I mean, they go to mainstream hospitals, or they go to mainstream experts, and they say, wow, this is such an anomaly. Well, maybe you have Munchausen, or we don't know. We don't have any answers. We can't help you. Or we'll medically kidnap your kid and just drug them to death with Abilify and Risperdal and Clonidine and all these powerful drugs. I mean, you know, a neurologist wanted my son on Abilify, which is on label used for schizophrenia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at age four. And, you know, I walked out of there thinking, why? Why would I put my child on a drug for schizophrenia at age four?
Well, the antidepressants, too. They want to, you know, load them up on antidepressants if they speak out or act out or, you know.
Or the ADHD drugs so that they sit still and at least stay quiet.
Those are powerful drugs.
Risperdal, the ones that now is creating man boobs and little boys that are taking it off-label for autism. Yeah, so that just didn't add up to me, you know, at all.
That's and a classic, say, I mean, I was classic case of the I'm cure not, is worse than the... than the disease.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have to say that if I had followed mainstream medicine's advice, that all the doctors that I was working with, because I was a sheeple, I admit it, I'm not here sitting in on any soapbox or high up chair saying that anybody who doesn't think the way I do is a big dummy. I was that person. I fully vaccinated my kid. I didn't question it. I didn't say anything. I didn't research it. I researched my car seat more than I researched the vaccines. I researched, you know, what dresser was the best dye, you know, for his nursery before I even researched what toxins could be in the new carpet in that room, or what kind of, you know, if I decided to quit breastfeeding, what sort of formula would be best for him. Nothing I trusted. You know, I'm not here on my high horse to say that I'm better than anyone. It took this to happen to me and my family for me to figure it out. So that's why, you know, the thinking moms again, getting back to my girls. And the one dad, we have one dad that read a chapter two.
Yeah, 23 moms and a brave dad, it says.
Yeah, one brave dad. And now, actually, sad to say, we are 22 moms. One of the moms that we worked with, she had already battled cancer when she joined in with us, and she lost her battle. So her son, Luke, is still doing great. We've done as much as we can to financially and emotionally support Melanie's husband and her son, who is still very much nonverbal and needs lots and lots of care. but that's a whole other show. We could talk another time.
I'm sure every child could be. Yeah, every kid could be a show of their own. We need to take a really quick break, and we'll be right back with you in 2 minutes. There's tons of information. Hope you'll join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we've got everything posted about the Thinking Moms Revolution and their two books. You can find both the two books, and we're going to find out how they raised money and supported each other in this alternative health thing when we come right back with Kim Spencer.
With so many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I built walls, that fortress deep and mighty. That I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain. It's laughter and it's loving I disdain. I am a rock. I am an island.
If that describes you and you're struggling with kids that are sick, you should stop being an island. Is that the point of that song, Bob? Where were we going with that?
Well, I could go either way, or it could describe the kid.
Oh, there you go. I wasn't sure what you were thinking over there in your engineering land. Fun.
I like it.
We like to, we like to mix it up with a little music, because obviously it can be it can be a little overwhelming. We cram a lot of information into short periods of time. Okay, so
yeah,
Kim.
Sorry, I know I'm just talking.
No, that's good.
Ask me questions.
No, that's good.
We count
on it. So, okay, so you guys made a nonprofit. I'm kind of curious about the funding part because the whole idea of doing alternative health, I don't care if it's for you or your kids or whoever, it's expensive and it isn't covered by insurance. So how'd you guys do that?
It is. I like to just throw it out there that my estimates and my own family for bringing Patrick back to us, probably $1 million out of pocket. Luckily, my parents were in a situation to help, and my husband works in my family's family business. So, you know, that was just the priority, and we said, you know, well, we could be paying for Harvard, or we could just get him back right now and worry about that later.
Yeah,
you know,
no kidding.
Just forget about saving for college and forget about private school or forget about a car or whatever. You know, it was just, we just couldn't worry about that. I'm just one of the lucky ones in a very unusual situation. I worked for my pediatrician for 3 years doing intake with kids like mine. And I saw the stories. I had about 300 people come in those three years, 300 families, and I saw that, you know, all the stories were very similar, and some of them were just heartbreaking that, you know, mom and dad didn't agree. Mom could do this alternative stuff all week long, but when she has to turn the child over to dad, you know, for his custody share, you know, on the weekend, he doesn't do it all. You know, our grandma was a caretaker and she didn't believe in any of it, but she doesn't do it all. Or, you know, that there just wasn't a team that agreed on how to treat the child and do all this stuff. So there's just a million situations where this is just so hard.
Sure, and a lot of this counts on dietary control, I guess. Change is the least of the problems.
Some protocols might be something you need to take care of on an hourly basis, or some.
Yeah, I would think the dietary control would be probably one of the most difficult things to handle, because I mean, you pretty much got to have him under your thumb 24/7.
Yeah, if you had to work or put your child in daycare or things
somebody
like
else
that.
Was taking care of them, you don't know what they're going to eat.
Absolutely. Or you need help and grandma takes them. Does she sneak the cupcake behind your back? Because that's what grandmas do. And then you've lost your kid for 3 days. That's what would happen with Patrick. I remember us saying, okay, it's been a while. We know the diet, you know, changing his diet and cleaning it up really well. It's helped him so much. It's somebody's birthday. Let him have a piece of pizza. And he had a piece of pizza and loved it and was gone for 3 days.
Really?
Back to screeching, back to not knowing where we were and, you know, reference to him. We were just he was just pretty much gone again. Yeah, so it was really hard. Yeah, just one piece of pizza. I know. Well, and I mean, his story, dietary story to begin with, was really amazing that in 3 days of me changing his diet after diagnosis, he saw me like he's never seen me before. So we had an extremely reactive child to foods.
What types of things should people look for in diet that, well, in your case,
in my case, the first thing we found, of course, I'm talking, you know, 12 years ago, where things, there were 3 books and things were very much less researched and less known then, was taking out wheat and gluten and also anything that came from cows. So dairy, and just those two things made a huge difference. Now, as far as our activism with the Thank You Mom or anything like that at this point, the idea mainly is now that we work with, say, Stephanie Seneff from MIT or Moms Across America, the women who are really learning more about glyphosate and Roundup and Monsanto. You know, I speak at March Against Monsanto. We try to eat organic. We try to keep it clean. So there's so much more now that we're starting to see affects our kids with diet other than just taking out wheat and dairy. But that just set us on the path right there, just wheat and dairy, and that was it.
And that really made the difference, just those two items. You saw
it
a
did.
Physical difference.
It did. Mm-hmm. Now, dairy gets out of the system pretty quickly. Wheat can take, or gluten can take up to 8 months, so it is a very diligent process. But the world is so much more in tune to these kind of things. I mean, we had to order this weird powdered milk online, you know, when we started, you know, first doing this with Patrick, and now you can just see almond milk everywhere you go, or coconut milk, or whatever, you know.
Oh, true. You have lots of choices,
you know,
for that.
I mean,
now.
There was nothing in the grocery store. You know, the health food section might have a gluten-free something piece of cardboard presenting itself as bread, but that was it. You know, so now it's just like, you know, there's so much more out there for parents, and it is a little bit easier. But you still have to be diligent. You still have to read labels, even in whole foods. I mean, even in your health food store, you still have to be diligent. But food is huge. So, you know, it just goes on and on, though. I mean, it just, so many things, cleaning products, over-the-counter medications, you know, building materials. If you have a new house or you remodel your house, you're opening your kid up for a lot of toxic influx there. Even new cars, even, you know, I mean, the chemtrails, the fluoride in the water. I mean, we are, you know, being, you know, inundated on every level.
But is this any different than it was 50 years ago? I mean, weren't we exposed to a lot of this stuff back then? And did we have this level?
Yeah, I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, I think it's hard for, say, my parents who are not even 70 yet, but they ate, you know, straight from the farm, and but the farmers didn't have Monsanto. You know, I mean, they didn't have, you know, that kind of thing going on. Cities didn't fluoridate their water. I'm 48 years old, and I had 6 vaccines in my life in, like, 1971. They were measles, mumps, and rubella, all were separated, so 3 and then 3 others. In my life, that's all I've ever had, is just those 6 needles. My son, Patrick, had 14 needles by the age of 6 months.
Holy cow.
14 needles by the age of 6 months, and many of those were combo vaccines. So we're not talking about how many diseases, we're talking about how many needles. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just... it's overwhelming. I mean, yes, I do think it's worse than ever. You look in the skies and you see the stripes. You look at, you know, it's just, you know, you know, people can go in the grocery store and get chemically ill. There's so much, you know, clean products and, you know, ick in there. Just food factory, processed foods. My family, my parents never had a box mix of anything that had, you know, bread wasn't made with all this bromated blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, it was just...
Sure.
Yeah, I mean...
The list of ingredients was pretty straightforward, and now you have to really be a chemist in order to figure out what's in things.
You do. And, I mean, today's a world where we're just, like, having Pop-Tarts and frozen corn dogs and, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken for dinner. I mean, this isn't the way that we ate, you know, at all.
I was at a county fair yesterday, and
you mean corn dogs are bad for you?
Bill wasn't
the frozen
there.
Ones especially.
Yeah, that's just a scary idea. But they had all these. It was something I hadn't seen before at the fair. It was a soda. It was a thing where you could go fill up your sodas. You bought the cup, and then you could go fill it up, and they were, I don't know how many ounces, but they were huge. I mean, they were like half-gallon mugs and, you know, these crazy, weird red-looking juice. And
yeah. Who ever had this giant blue drink in their hand as a 7-year-old, you know, with a blue sucker in their mouth?
I did. I looked at the blue ones, and I thought, you know, that
can't be
good.
Pure sugar and some sort of dye,
food dye. I mean, one of the very oldest and most basic diets that are out there, because there's so many that treat, you know, behaviors in children, and one of the earliest ones was the Feingold diet, and that took out food dyes right there. They knew a long time ago, that was just a recipe for disaster if you wanted your kid to sit still. So if you give them red dye number 40 and send them off to school, or, as they often do, you send them off to school with a good diet and they send your kid home full of red dye 40 because somebody had a birthday, you know, you've ruined days.
Yeah.
You've done all kinds of work, you know, so...
My sister went on this same little journey that you were on with her youngest, and they wound up pulling the other 2 kids out of school, so because they couldn't do it. They couldn't have one child with a totally special program that everybody wasn't part of, and it was just making it was kind of wrecking their family. I mean, they were kind of all over the place. So she decided to homeschool for 2 years, 3 years, something like that, and pulled her off all the medication, my niece off all the medication, and she was way out there, and they told her she was going to have to be on, I don't know the names of all the things, but it was like you said, with the psychiatric medications and stuff like that, and they said, no, we're going to try a bunch of other stuff first. But they had to go down this road. I think this is more common than people realize, and she's 13, 14 now, so around the same time you were dealing with this as well.
And you know what? You actually asked me about our nonprofit and how to pay for all this.
Yes, but now we have to hold on because we have to take another break. See, this
but
is,
yes, we need to talk about our nonprofit.
Yeah,
now.
This is what kills us. We have these bright ideas and we take a break and then we lose the whole thing. But we're going to come back and we're totally talking about the nonprofit. I'm going to make a note. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Maybe I don't speak too well, but I'm coming out of my shell, and I like playing by myself, if you can't tell. I like to go to school, and yeah, I'm a miracle, and I'm glad to be I will understand the words that you're saying to me. My autism is like a prison that I'm in.
I don't know how to comment on that. Good one. I didn't know there was an autism song, so I need to get out more. Where'd you find that?
I know, y'all almost made me cry. Don't do that.
I know. That's kind of a... It's like, ooh, we took our normally funny twist and... Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
It is. It's serious. It is. I mean, all of us have lost our kids, and it's just... I can't tell you on a daily basis how at least once a day I have to say to myself, what kind of world is it when I can just shout out and say, this happened to my baby. And I am telling you, so you go learn, and you go see, and you protect your baby. And people turn around and say, you're crazy. I don't need to listen to you. Your story doesn't count. It is just absolutely the craziest thing, and there's no way that our government and our medical system could be doing us this wrong. And I just don't have words, you know? I mean, I will never stop, and I reach someone, you know, Binky Moms reaches someone constantly, and that's the reward. I'm excited to talk to you guys. If there's just one mommy or one daddy out there that says, uh-oh, this is either my kid or my wife is pregnant, or, oh my gosh, this is the 15th time I've heard this. Maybe I need to look into it now. You know, these kind of things are that keep us going. But, you know, I mean, there's a world, there's a huge majority out there that says you're wrong and we don't care what happened to your kid. You do not matter. Your story does not matter.
I can see that because it challenges the, you know, I mean, especially we all know if you start talking about the vaccines and stuff, people get pretty worked up. There are a lot of people who refuse to believe that that could be harmful. And obviously they haven't read the list of ingredients, but, you know. That
or, you know, research that the Supreme Court calls them unavoidably unsafe and that our government paid out $3 billion and vaccine injury when that's not even close to everybody that's ever wanted to file or should file. You know, that the reporting system is just a database full of injuries that's only 10% of what is expected to really happen in the real population.
Yikes.
I mean, it's real. It's real.
So your nonprofit, what does it do? I mean, I get why you formed it, but what does it do and what does it do now?
So we're kind of really evolving to this amazing new stage of our nonprofit. So what happened was when we wrote the book, we just really quickly formed an LLC. You know, not that we expected a whole bunch of money to run and, you know, roll in for the 24 of us at all, but we just needed to have some sort of something on on paper. But that wasn't really what we wanted. We wanted a nonprofit, and that would have taken a little bit longer and just a whole lot more rigmarole. So as we've progressed, we have gotten a 501c3 going, and it's called Team TMR. So TMR standing for Thank You Moms Revolution. At this point and up until probably the end of the year, we have been a 100% grant program. So if someone wants to fly to see Dr. So-and-so, then we might give you plane tickets or pay that doctor to see your child. Or some people have had really emergency situations where one of our 34-year-old moms has just had a stroke and needed respite care immediately for her son. You know, so we were able to pay for, 24-hour care for about 3 weeks for that kid. So, you know, these kinds of things, I mean, we just really keep it wide open as to what, is needed from the parents. And the website is www.teamtmr.org. And the grant application, is on that website. Also, a way to donate is on that website. In case anybody would like to help us out. It's been slow going, and that's fine. I mean, we all are special needs moms that are trying to run a nonprofit and promote this idea of healing and hope in the world. So we wax and wane as to who can, help the most. And we want to keep it as much volunteer as we can. We have no paid employees. We don't do anything like that. But we have just in the last couple of weeks been working with a nonprofit guru who came into our lives just from a chance meeting at an airport. And he is helping us produce a new online TV network that will have 10 to 15 channels of just endless information. I mean, one channel will be all about food for our kids. One channel will be about politics. One channel will be about, school issues. One channel will be about self-advocacy for any kid who wants to talk. Another one for siblings that want to talk. And this network is actually interactive. So anyone will be able to download an app and use a selfie stick or not and record their own little, here, I just made this for my son and it's completely allergen free and he loved it. Let me show you how I made it. Or here I am sitting at the California State House in Sacramento and, so-and-so is on the podium and I'm going to interview somebody standing next to me, or I'm meeting with my congressman. Let me show you what he has to say. Or I was just in this IEP meeting and this happened and, this is what I said to get what I needed or whatever. I mean, just so you can imagine, the endless amounts of information that we can get from everyone. So we have been working really hard to provide tons of startup content to get these channels going, and probably going to release all this in about November, probably early November.
Oh, wow.
And roll it out to the world. Yeah, so we have this chance to have not only a grant program, and of course, on this TV network, we'll provide, text the word Team TMR to 96362 to donate. So we'll start bringing in more money, hopefully. But at the same time, this piece is so interactive with the community, but also providing so much outreach and education for any parent who wants to, find out more about where we're coming from with this idea that, you don't have to just listen to your pediatrician and your occupational therapist, that there's more out here for your baby. So, yeah, we're really excited. And at this point, we're still trying to dole out as much money as we can. We've had a Facebook online auction lately that was really cool. It was just like all kinds of things that autism families would want, and they were able to bid on these items. Doctor's visits, essential oils, gift cards, whatever, and get all these things that all of us, our families use anyway for a cheaper price than it would be normally. So that was kind of like its own little grant program, just doing that auction. Plus we raised $23,000 for our grant program. So,
oh, wow.
We just keep kind of, rolling along, finding the best people in the world and people who really care about helping our kids, and really, really just want, this all to come to light and make it stop and make it slow down and make sure that our kids have a life, I mean,
I would imagine at one point you probably got pushback from the medical community. Like when
you know what? We kind of stay a little bit under the radar. I mean, you know, there's evil trolls everywhere, and we have some that like to write about us and stuff like that. But I mean, we just kind of stay in the light, you know? I mean, what does that matter? Like, say what you want to, but I can go next door and help my, you know, friend over here with the 15-year-old that screams all night and find a way to make that stop. And it doesn't have anything to do with whatever anybody wants to say. We can find the answers, you know?
Sure, but I guess what I was thinking is now I would imagine that's changed quite a bit. It seems that more medical people are getting on board with some of this, you know, the alternative things,
you know,
if you will.
I hope so. You know, I mean, you hear stories that are very encouraging every day, and then you hear a story of, you know, a medical kidnapping at some random children's hospital where, you know, everybody's absolutely evil and takes somebody's kid because they don't believe that strep can be an autoimmune disease, you know, Strep. So there's this part of some of our kids are going through something called PANDAS, and it's pediatric, my son dealt with this for a while, pediatric autoimmune neurodegenerative strep. And basically, instead of having, you know, every kid gets strep throat, right? So you have a sore throat and a fever and maybe a rash, and you take antibiotics and you go back to school and you're done. Well, what's happening is, and it's not well accepted in mainstream, is that strep, and actually pretty much any pathogen, so it would be called PANS at that point, pediatric autoimmune neurodegenerative syndrome, where this pathogen has gone into this kid who has a compromised immune system because we've been messing with the immune system so badly with chemicals and chemicals and chemicals and medical interventions. And then this common or not common pathogen causes an autoimmune reaction. So where Patrick would display in behaviors, aggressive, regressive, biting himself, angry, kind of stuff. And then we went and tested his strep titers, like any you would for any kid that just had strep throat, and there they were, like 5 times higher than the average kid. So talking about that, it's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, we could do a whole show on that too. So it's just like these crazy things that we're figuring out in the background, you know, that everybody's starting to see as a pattern that in our community. And then you go, okay, well, let me go tell this doctor or tell that doctor. And then some people catch on, and then you think, you know, we're making headway. And then there's lashback. I mean, you know, I mean, everywhere you go, it's both. It's the dark and the light. It's so frustrating.
No, because you think now, you know, I mean, even the, like the grocery stores that aren't specialty. I mean, you know, different places in the country have different, you know, different chains of grocery stores. But for the most part, if you were going to find anything organic or anything along those lines, you'd have to go to a really high-end grocery store where, right, you know, your basic canned food would be double, maybe 3 times that of the, you know, of the cheap one. But anymore, those things are available and people kind of understand it. I would think what you're saying would be more easily accepted, I guess.
Yeah, well, and I think that the corporations that kind of have kept, you know, everything pretty much at a level of gross and poison are starting to realize that there's a lot to be said for the awakening masses that are saying, I would rather buy this than that, you know. I would rather go farther to a Whole Foods to get that organic canned tomato than I would to buy your crap in the grocery, you know, regular grocery store. So, you know, these corporations are really responding, just like fast food, like Chipotle or whoever, you know, these people that are, these companies that are really waking up to the fact that the masses are looking for this. It's money driven. It's all money driven. It's all greed. So.
Sure. But it's also all supply and demand driven. And so if we demand it, you know, if we are the demand, the supply will follow. We need
to
take one last.
What we have to watch out for, though, is that, and I love to make this point, what we have to watch out for is that now that there is this resistance, now that people are turning around, now that there all these things are coming to light, they're starting to make laws to make us do the bad things and keep us.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
With that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, you know, this is really, really scary when you think about, okay, well, people are starting to figure out that this we could do better. And they're going to say, oh, but then you're messing with my bottom line, and I won't have that, and I'll change to pay the government to to make you do what I want you to.
Yeah, to see if we can and if we can control that. Well, and then all of our states, of course, have different ideas, and so you know what's organic in one place wasn't organic in another, and you know, so we had to at least make that a uniform decision. Now they've done that with GMOs. At least there will be a bottom line. You can, you know, you can always up it, but at least there was a minimum standard. A lot of states don't have referendum, and we were trying to do it by, you know, getting signatures and that kind of thing. And we all know where that goes. Sometimes, sometimes good, sometimes bad.
I was really confident in myself in the state of Georgia. I live in Georgia, and so I was really all, you know, pumped up that this year we didn't have anything really on the books concerning vaccines in our state legislature. But our vaccine laws did change in committee and public health department, so the Department of Public Health within the state of Georgia. So they can get us anywhere they want
to.
We just
California just passed, mandated vaccine, and now they're going for the grown-ups. So I know there's there's quite a move out here to get that, you know, to get that reversed. We need to take one more quick break, and then we'll be back. We're talking to Kim Spencer from the Thinking Moms Revolution. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes.
And solitaire's the only game in town, and every road that takes him, takes him down. And by himself it's easy to pretend.
Interesting. So if that describes your child, you need to meet Kim Spencer. And and her.
I need to go back and research these songs.
Yeah, no kidding. I do too. Who's that, Karen Carpenter?
I've got my
Carpenters
for the night.
Yeah, Karen Carpenter. I haven't heard her in a long time. It's a sad story all by itself.
Every album.
Yeah. Okay, so the Thinking Moms Revolution. It's not the in the website. Hold on here.
www.thinkingmomsrevolution.com.
There we go.
And then the nonprofit is www.teamtmr.org. Both are interchangeable. We blog several times a week on every different subject that we want to talk about. I will mention that throughout the last three years of doing all this, we had another 30 moms that we met online that wanted to tell their stories too. So we put their stories in another book and self-published that one. And all the proceeds for that second book actually go to the nonprofit. And most of the stories in that book are all recovery stories, so it's really inspiring. And so they are volunteers that help us with the auctions and everything that they can do all day long, you know, to help us as well. We just need, you know, hands on deck to save our babies.
No kidding. And so, you know, one thing I was thinking of during the break, let's say your child is 10 now, and you've had them on all this medication and all that because you didn't know that there were ways to work around it. Is there ever a too late point?
No, absolutely not. I will never accept that that would ever be the case.
You probably meet people that are in all different phases of this.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's going to be tough to back out of these meds, and it's tough to teach a child who's been used to eating what they want to eat that they need to eat these other things. It's tough. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not easy. It's also not cheap, But, you know, what else do we have that our children,
sure.
you know? I mean, you know, if you just, if it's just too overwhelming and you can't do anything and you're fine, you know, but you have to drop the ball, there's other things that are important, and institutionalization, or are you getting beat up when they're 175 pounds and 6 feet tall like my son is? You know, I mean, these are the things we're facing. I can't judge. I don't know your life. But I will say that we're here for you if you want help and if you want to learn. We have so much information on our blog. We have so much interaction on our Facebook. If we don't know the answers, we can send you to someone that can help you, give you ideas. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, we're here because we know there's hope, and we know there's healing on whatever level, you know, whatever you can bring him back. Can you bring your son back to a point where he can live in your home with you for the rest of his life instead of being in an institution drugged up and tied down? You know, come on, let's try it. Let's just see.
Sure.
You know, why not?
And now your son, now after 15 years of, you know, I don't know how long it took, but now that he's 15, can he just eat whatever he wants? Is he going to get to a point where he can kind of do whatever he wants, or do things have to be still
a great question.
Really monitored?
That's a great question, because I get some sideways glances sometimes. You won't catch me driving through McDonald's with the Thinky Mom bumper sticker on my car.
Yeah,
I will not get busted. No, that's not happening. Do I sometimes let him have pizza? Yes. Do I see any regression from it? No. One thing that we hugely utilize is digestive enzymes. So, that is a big product in our house. And, you know, if you're going to go and have that cupcake, then we're going to, you know, make sure that your tummy has some tools to handle it.
Well, because I was just thinking, like, when he goes to college and stuff like that.
Beer has gluten, right? Yeah, I don't ever see him drinking that at all. He's just not into that. But, you know, I mean.
Well, no, yeah, but just eating, you know. I mean, if he lived in a dormitory or whatever.
Absolutely. Well, he's super picky, and I've found some things that he really, really likes, and we work really hard on him being able to fix them for himself. Self-help skills are so huge, you know. So, we'll get there. I've got high school to go. We just started a month ago.
So the fun is just beginning.
I'm working.
That's fun. Well, thanks, exactly. Kim. I am so glad we finally, I finally got my act together. It was not your fault. It was mine that I couldn't tell what day it was.
I only sent you three long phone numbers, so I think we're equal here.
It's okay. You know, sometimes those hard-fought connections are the best. So thank you very much for coming on with us. And if any thing changes,
and, you know,
on.
We have, you know, 24 to 50 more stories that are, you know, we'd love to talk to you anytime. So just let us know. Thank you for the platform.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it.
That's
so much.
Great. Keep us posted, and we'll do another show. I'm positive.
All right, great. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You can find all Kim's information on our website, wethepeopleradio.us.